Hey, Bob Saget. Bob Saget's here for you. That's the name of the podcast. And we've changed the branding. I don't know if you noticed, but my picture's in black and white now instead of color. That's huge, huge difference. It's really changed the podcast. Thanks for being here again. I got Colin Quinn as my guest today. And he has a special that I just watched on HBO Max that is just great. It's called Summer of 2020, a drive-in comedy special. And it's wonderful. It has a lot of comedians that I love and some I don't know. And it's a real fun, good-feeling special because you kind of feel what it's like to do stand-up during a pandemic and what it's like backstage and to have a bunch of people in their cars laughing. I'm going to be doing a gig soon where I'll be doing it December 12th in Irvine, I think at the Spectrum Center and some big drive-in there. And I'm going to use the cutaways from his special in case they're not laughing. And he has a book. Colin Quinn has a book called Overstated, A Coast-to-Coast Roast of 50 States. And he also has a special on Netflix that I just watched today, Red State, Blue State. If you haven't seen it, it's a must, especially for what we're all going through right now with the way the world is in disarray. Disarray is a dancer I used to know. Anyway, do what you do with this podcast. You rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. And then I said, one time I was just getting started, I had Bill Burr on, and I said, well, how does this work? And I said, I tell people the podcast is free. He said, they're all free, Bob. All of them are free. Then you want advertisers, but you want to do this for a long time. He's been doing it for 12, 14 years, and this is my 60th something, 67th, something like that. I don't know what number I'm on, but can't wait till 69. But that has nothing to do with my podcast. Hey, so that's it. That's all I got to tell you. You guys enjoy this because I'm letting him in right now. Let me hit this button. Here comes Colin Quinn. You look so good.
Bob, let me tell you, you're very, very lucky.
I know.
Until this, I've done how many of these? I've never had that backlight on with this look.
You're a glow. It's...
And the red shirt only accentuates it, you know?
Yeah, you actually, your favorite special that I loved was Red Shirt, Yellow Lamp.
Thank you. I don't look like I have high blood pressure in this. I feel like I have almost a devilish look.
Well, it's good. Your blood pressure is good, right?
Well, you know.
I mean, you're a vegan.
Yes, I am.
I've been, how are you? You've been doing tons of press for your new special?
Bob, I'm fantastic.
Have you never been happier, right?
Yes.
Oh my, everything's aligned. All the stuff you were worried about, all the stuff you've been talking about for 40 years is fine now.
Wait a minute. Rodney Dangerfield, but who's next to him? That's not you.
It's Red Fox.
Oh.
That is a picture taken by a guy named Paul Mobley. He took the damn picture, and it's just amazing. It's just two of them just hanging.
It's a good picture.
Yeah. There were no drugs were used between them, I'm sure.
When we were young, you'd look at a picture like that and we'd be like, oh, those old guys are so out of shape. Now I'm like, hey, they're not in bad shape either.
I know. I get really excited when I'm watching TV and I go, oh, he's got some girth around his stomach.
Yes.
Oh, thank God. I my eyes just go, I'm 64. I go right to the belt. And it's not because I'm looking for dudes. It's because I'm feeling better about my own gut.
Yeah, but just the fact you said that, now I know you all looking for dudes. Because I would say, my eye goes right for his gut, and I wouldn't even think to say that.
Yeah. So here's a quick question. Could you stand up real quick? No, don't do it. Don't do it. I turned this into just a chat line for dudes. That's what I...
Well, that's a good idea. I'm in.
So, hell, I watched your special last night, and you've got the longest titles of specials that I've ever seen in my life. It really felt good to watch it. I've been suffering, wanted to do stand-up really bad, and I did Dave Chappelle's summer camp, but it wasn't like doing a run of shows. And then I'm watching HBO Max, which I actually love, because HBO Go doesn't function anymore on my TV. It just stopped. Yes. Right? But it goes around the world, which is what's so great about it. And it's called Summer of 2020. It's universal, but it's HBO Max, and it's Summer 2020, a drive-in comedy special. And I loved it. I loved it. It made me feel like I was part of it again, kind of. So have you been doing a bunch of drive-ins? Did you do a bunch leading up to it?
No, I didn't. I didn't perform for 6 months before it, you know?
Right.
No shows because I was working on other stuff, and because you know, I just didn't have the heart. You know, if I was like 25, I'd be like, I'm going to put on a show for two people in an alley. But like, you know, at a certain point, you're like, okay, if that was the end, fine, whatever, you know.
Well, also, if it's two people in an alley, you know, somebody's getting money and somebody's getting a little brown bag of some kind.
Well, it's like your thing about the eye contact, you know, Rodney and Red Fox.
Yeah. Their friendship was based on funny people. Incredibly funny.
Two closeted homosexuals, which a lot of people don't know.
I think, I would guess. But if you could be non-closeted in a closet. You could.
Not in those days. Well, all right.
That would be a David Copperfield trick, I believe. So now you're home. Have you been this must have been driving you ape shit like it has me.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course it didn't affect me as much as I thought in a certain way, because I'm like a half a shut in when I'm not doing comedy.
Same.
Unless I'm doing comedy, I like excuses to stay home.
Right.
But the actual stand-up part, yeah, it bugs you because you just feel like it's such a part of our lives to do it, you know.
And the thing was so wonderful to see. I mean, to see Rich Voss, it's just hilarious. I mean, you guys, just watching you guys backstage dishing each other.
Yeah. The Rich Voss thing was a mistake in retrospect. But yes, the idea of people. Yeah, I get it.
Why do you say in retrospect? You mean dishing him?
No, having him around, having him in my life.
I never felt that way about him. I always liked him. Maybe he was just so nice and I was buying into that.
No, he's not nice. But yeah, no, I mean, I've known Rich a long time. Yeah,
yeah, same.
So funny. The master of the counterpunch. People attack Voss, kill him, to where the audience almost feels sorry for him when we're doing radio. And then he starts hitting back and he's so mean and so truthful that everybody just, you know.
That's when I started to love him. Yeah, because I'm the same way. You throw one. I look like this guy that, you know, that'll sell you a vacuum cleaner or check your prostate, you know, or vacuum your prostate. But, you know, you can tell when you're setting it on stunt. You have stuff you want to say. You could mess with the audience all you want, but you've always been so prolific. I've always admired that about you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, no, I write a lot. I write a lot of stand-up, you know. I do. It's sadly my only hobby.
Well, there's probably other stuff, but you don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, Hobby Lobby stuff, but, you know, you don't talk about that. They're very politically incorrect, but, you know.
Yeah. I mean, my hobby used to be asphyxiation, but then I got married and I figured, why hold on to that, you know?
Yeah. Why have the dog now hold on to that for that matter?
So, your impetus for this was you could have done another hour special by yourself if you wanted. What was the reason you chose this route?
Well, I just talked to them about it because, I mean, I didn't know an hour special was on the table. Well, they'd all be sitting home right now, cooling their heels. But I just thought it'd be fun to, like, you know, I love when comedians get together. You know how it is. It's always just so annoying if you're not a comedian, but fun to watch because everybody's so funny. I mean, it sounds so obvious, but comedians are so funny in general, you know, where it's just everybody's, you know, you never sit down. Like, that's why all these podcasts are comedians, because comedians are never at a loss for words. They always have to say something. If you don't know anything about the subject, by the time you're done talking, you're like, oh yeah, I do know something about that.
Right. Unless you're trying to teach me how to work a standard shift. I can't, you know, I can't do that. I have to be in the, I could do it if I was in the car, but you have been, so you haven't done a show since, I would assume, right?
No, I did one show since.
What was that?
It was a tent, an outdoor tent show. And that was all right. It's fine. But like you said, this is, you know, for us, I mean, even if we're ready to come back in 6 months, the audience might not be ready to come back.
And it might not be safe for them. I mean, you know.
I'm not worried about that, but they might not come back and make it safe for us.
That's true. You're right. I mean, we got to think about our own lives first. I just don't want to be around other comedians because I know they have it. I'm sure most of them have it.
They're not healthy people.
No, my God. They live off their own maggot-driven. I mean, they take drugs and they eat corned beef at night.
Even the healthy ones, there's something unhealthy about them.
Who is the comedian? He's a nice-looking guy. He went on first, and all he talked about the whole show was that he bombed. He was all about him.
Chris DiStefano, yeah.
Right. He's a funny guy. I thought he did fine. It's just...
He did fine, but as he said, he went on before the announcement, like, hey, honk your horns, so it was silent. So that's the only problem with doing comedy, no crowds. Everyone's, you're not sure how you're doing. The audience is, as you know, the audience is so collaborative with us.
Right.
That it drives you crazy, but that's the way it is. Without them, we can't work out stuff.
Well, that's what Jerry, who directed your play, which was incredible, The New York Story. My God, look what you've done. I mean, think about it for a second. Broadway shows that turn into specials that have an amazing run on Broadway. You're sold out. Jerry directed it. What did he say to you? Stand over here?
Yeah. Well, Jerry is the master of structure, as you know.
100%, 1,000,000,000%.
So he's like, why would you say that? What is that leading to? And makes you think like, oh yeah, why would I say extra? You know what I mean? Why would I lead down a different road than I'm trying to go on?
Did he remove some of the asides that you would have normally gone down?
Yeah. I mean, my asides are what comedians love. I love doing asides.
I love asides.
Me too. But I mean, they can be, you know, they can drop you off the track. People aren't in our heads, so they can't think to get back, you know.
Especially in a play, especially with that kind of a presentation, he's spot on in knowing, cut the fat off, just get to it.
Yeah. Well, if the whole world was comedians, I would be the happiest person around, because then you can do whatever you want stand-up wise and they're focused. But, you know, that's not going to happen.
What's interesting to me, and I know you felt it when you did this thing, because it's obvious you're friends with all of them. You had a couple that you like more. I could tell who you really don't like. Yeah. That's obvious. Your face can't hide, you know. No, you've never been able to do that. We've known each other off and on for at least 20 years or more, I would think. I mean,
yeah, no, 20 years. It's about 20, yeah.
Yeah. And I love comedians now more than I ever have. And when I went and did that summer camp with Chappelle, Louis C.K. was there, and Chris Tucker and Chris Spencer and Michelle Wolf and Darnell. And it just felt good. And everybody got tested. Okay, breathe in my, you know, snot in my mouth. I don't care.
Right.
And then I went, I got a joke. I don't know if I should do it. And it's an inappropriate joke for a lot of people. It's, you know, a cornfield in the middle of Ohio. It was an abortion joke. And at the same time, Louis C.K. and Dave said, open with it.
Right.
But now when you did your set, which was really great, by the way.
Oh, really, thanks.
It was. And did you find yourself wanting to try anything new? Or did you, because I know it was edited. New,
because we didn't get to do it.
Right.
I told everybody they have to do new stuff.
That's right.
People doing their act. it's got to talk about what's going on, you know?
There and is no act
anymore.
You can't
tell if you're bombing anyway. Who cares?
Right. I'm doing a drive-in in December, and Bill Burr told me he did one, and instead of someone heckling, she drove away.
Yeah, yeah. That's great.
Now, this thing for HBO Max, that was literally just one out of love, and they said, would you like to do one? Was that kind of how this came to fruition?
What do you mean out of love?
Like out of you just wanting to do the show, doing a show. Did you go to them or did they come to you? Did you owe them a show?
My manager, I mentioned to him months ago, like on a tweet about, oh, drive-in comedy. So then back in March. So then he went to them and started talking to them about it. And then like, oh yeah, let's do something. And then they said, I wanted to be like half stand-up and half, you know, what we like to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They used to call it kibitzing back before our time.
But, you know, we like to do our shtick with each other.
And so, you know, so yeah, so I wanted to do that. I love comedians, you know, off stage as much as on stage. There's something connected about us off and on stage. And so I like to make sure that connection is always there, you know, if I can, you know.
I like when it's low key in a room and everybody just sitting around waiting. And that's happened for both of us when we've done benefit shows or when there's 8-10 people on a big show, which is what this made me feel very longing for it. And it's everybody's kind of low key and Rich is just kind of walking around and then people just take a shot at him. And then the energy comes up a little bit and then it goes back down. It's just so funny. Like you literally throw a ninja star at somebody and they don't, why would you say that to me? And that's when the fun starts.
We're like 12-year-old kids.
That is why. And I think all comedians are, except for you have, to me, captured some of the things that George Carlin was so astute at, which is that he wasn't like a 12-year-old kid. He became I would say had a bit of a prophet level of way of speaking and thinking.
He did. Yeah. I mean, he was, but it was also because he was so thorough and so, because he was raised by those Jesuit priests, those schools where they were, that generation did their homework. So you watch his specials and how could you even memorize the things he memorized? I couldn't.
I don't, that's a photographic memory, but it also is, he has to say it so much. And he has to say it, not unlike how Jerry looks at it, right, in the specific way that it must be said.
Yes. And so it's crazy watching a guy like him, you know, but I mean, that's, yeah, he was the exception. I mean, how many specials did he put out?
14. 14 of them. 14 HBO. 14. Okay.
14? Jesus. So that just goes to show. I mean, that's
Jesus put out 16.
Jesus put out, well, I'm not counting the parables. I count the parables as one special.
Okay. Then it would be how many apostles? There's 12.
12,
right? So I guess 12, when he comes back, they said they're going to, Netflix is locking him.
I mean, four, and you count the Apostle Paul, Timothy. Yeah, you're right. It's less than George Carlin. Let's just say that.
Do you remember when Judas demanded his own special? It was so gross. And he stole everybody's stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not going to lie to you. 3 hours ago, I was watching Red State, Blue State. Ooh. And to me, that's one of the best specials ever made. But that was a play, right? So for how long did you do that? How long did you, it was your hour floating and then it became a play, right?
No, well, I did it for about 4 months, but almost every night. So the great thing is it's stand up, but when you're doing it in a play form, you're doing 8 shows a week.
Yeah.
So 8 hours, you're doing an hour. It's like doing an hour of stand up, 8 shows a week. And so that's why it was a Vegas lounge act. It gets tight from when you work that often, you know. When do we do 8 shows a week? Never, you know.
I've done Broadway a couple times and one off Broadway, and I did 9 shows a week. I would do one for the hearing impaired, but I wasn't off book totally because I was allowed some latitude. It was a Paul White's play. And so they've telestrated the script in script form, but I wasn't matching it. So all of the people that were deaf in the audience were laughing at me the whole time because they could read my lips and it wasn't matching the telestrated words. So that's, and it was a serious part. It was pretty.
Oh, no, serious.
I was playing an insider trader. It was called Privilege.
But don't you feel that even when we're being, like, one of the reasons I became a comedian was because a lot of my life, even as a kid, the more serious I got, the more people would start laughing at me.
That is what I admired about you from the very beginning.
Yeah.
In Red State, Blue State also, you did something which is, it's like our town, probably when that came out and the stage manager started talking to people and they went, wait a minute, this doesn't feel like theater, but you come in the side door. I know New York Times called you the barstool.
Philosopher.
Yeah, you are a philosopher. You are.
Well, I think barstool philosopher is a bit of a left-handed compliment.
Well, these days it sounds like you're part of barstool sports.
But it also sounds like, hey, you ever see that movie Joe with Peter Boyle? Hey, pal, let me tell you something.
Yeah, he was real calm in that movie.
Yeah.
They wanted to do a spinoff, but spoiler alert, he doesn't make it. So, wow. How do you have time? Well, you did have time, but you didn't. You wrote this book before the pandemic. This is...
I wrote it during the pandemic. I started it before.
And it just came out.
Well, it just came out because I had so much time during the pandemic that I said, if I don't finish this book now, I'm lying. I'm not going to, if I had no excuse to not work all the time because it was the pandemic. I could do that, you know? So that's why I finished it because I knew I wouldn't finish it. If I didn't finish it now, I never get it done. You know?
Well, people have to read it. It's called Overstated, A Coast to Coast Roast of 50 States. Yeah. Which is not unlike Red State, Blue State. You're really, this is always on your mind, right? It always has been. What's the separation of all of us? Why are we like this?
Yeah.
And have we evolved? And what's your answer to that? I mean, I know what your answer is.
I mean, one of my answers is that we bit off this impossible task and, you know, a lot of times a country, I mean, I'm not the first one to say that, but it's just an agreed on narrative. And so once everybody has a different narrative, so I say in Red State, Blue State, the left only sees the negative, the right only sees the positive in this country. So when those two negatives are you can't ever agree on anything because when you see it from that angle, you can always make an argument for that. So our country is famous for compromise, but nobody's interested in that anymore, you know?
And I don't get it. I don't get it because I go, we're all human beings. Let's pretend everybody brings up the forefathers. I'm pretty sure there were times where they beat the shit out of each other in Philadelphia and Independence Hall.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They were all, I always say in my other show, this unconstitutional show I did there, how they were, first of all, they were drinking the whole time.
Right.
And so that made things go a lot easier because they're drinking. So, you know, you're more inclined to argue, but more inclined to go, all right, fine. And but even people that came to agree on the founding fathers, never mind, you know. So this, it's almost irreparable unless some horrible. I thought that this coronavirus was going to unite people, but that only put people further apart. And so maybe it's time to just chop it up a little bit. Like, you know what I mean? Like the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics became a bunch of different countries, you know?
That's what I loved what you were talking about in Red State, Blue State, because you're talking about Hungary, how far a drive it is to get to Scotland.
Right.
That's like, why, that people change every 700 miles, I think you said.
Right, yeah.
They turn into a different kind of person. And yet, if you look at the Middle East, and I've been around it as much as I can, as much as I was allowed to over the years, to travel anywhere. I'm going like, well, wait passport. A second. What?
So with your passport, you know, you're in Jordan. They're like, Saget. You're like, let me explain the root of the name.
The root of the name would actually, they would send me away. I would never come home. It was like Zagat or Zogat or something.
Yeah.
Ancestry.com wrote back and said, we can't help you. But you, your point is so, I would say in the Middle East, it's like I'll go and I'll look, and nobody likes to hear this, but I'll look at people from all the outlying countries who look at Israel and Palestine and Syria, and I am I profiling by going, these guys are cousins? I mean, and then some of them are that don't talk to each other.
Yeah, of course. I mean, East Jerusalem, but I mean, but that's what I'm afraid our country is going to be, kind of like a West Bank situation pretty soon, you know, where there's just borders and people are like, okay, go here or not, and just minor skirmishes, you know, and that's what it could turn into, you know.
How can we stop that? I mean, you know, how? I mean, we can't even gracefully get out of what we're going through right now.
Yeah, we need, if we create an enemy, like if the powers that be decide to, you know, accuse Canada of wiping out a city, and we'll probably have to lose a city. So like, let's say Missoula, Montana is near Canada. So they just destroy that. I'm sorry, Missoula, but you know, they're doing it for the greater good. And then we all focus on Canada. And then spend years with our hatred towards this country that destroyed one of our cities, the great city of Missoula. That's how you bond, with hatred towards something else.
That is unfortunately a common enemy, but that's the South Park movie also. It was all blame Canada. And it was the Jewish mother that incited all the anger. She was the Karen of the movie. You know, all the things in our vernacular right now that drive me insane, where you'll watch the news and then someone says, well, we have a lot to unpack here. I guess it's because we're all moving. But it was so right what you said when, you know, Omaha and New Jersey, how those, they're so different and they might, but I appreciate people from everywhere. When you tour and you tour through conservative South and you go into an all Christian and Republican audience, that's some of my best audiences. They want to hear stuff that makes them think or holds a mirror up, even if they don't agree with it, if you're not coming off caustic, if you're not
sure. But a lot of people, including a lot of people we know, would call those people Nazis. So, you know.
And that's crazy, because you've got to know.
Nazis. Yeah.
Well, there's always two Nazis at every show, but that's part of my rider.
Yeah.
Because I don't work, Colin. I don't work well unless I got fear. So I always have a couple Nazis. They're in uniform.
The adrenaline that you used to be able to get for performing, now you need Nazis.
Yeah, exactly. And then I tell them there's strudel afterward.
Yeah. You know what, Bob? I get it. A lot of people wouldn't get that, but I get it.
We're going to take a quick break because, believe it or not, that's what I do. So we'll take a fast one. You don't have to do anything. Okay, we're back. This is why podcasts are the best thing.
Quick.
Yeah, right? Do you want to get more water? Do you need anything?
Nope.
Do you ever order? You don't eat meat, so you don't go to Katz's and get a sandwich.
No, I'm a vegan, as you know. No, kidding me? I eat meat every day.
I thought you were a vegan. You said you were.
I've never been a vegan. I eat meat. Well, I had a heart attack 2 years ago from bacon.
What the fuck? When did you have a heart attack? 2 years ago?
I ate bacon 6 days a week for 30 years until 2 years ago. Now you tell me, does that sound like a vegan to you?
No, it sounds like a pegan.
A pagan, yeah.
Wait a minute. It says in your bio, I'm holding it right here. I think it says you're a vegan. Wait a minute. It can't say that. Not if you had a heart attack from bacon.
No.
What was that like? Because I'm looking forward to mine.
Well, here's what's scary. I thought your arm went numb. My arm didn't go numb. All I felt was a horrible, like somebody's putting an elbow in my chest. So I started screaming, cursing like crazy. Ah, you know. So sometimes your arm goes numb and sometimes it doesn't. Mine didn't go numb. It was fine. But I felt literally a pain like in my chest that wouldn't go away. So it was very painful.
And yeah, they say it's like bricks on your chest, right?
Well, I mean, I gave you a perfect analogy for what happened to me, which is the elbow on the chest.
That's what comics do. I'm a douche. Because comics, you'll say a word and then they'll go, oh, they're not, and writers in a room, they punch it up by saying a word not as good.
Yeah.
You know?
Bricks doesn't work for me.
So the bricks, elbow. No, they weren't bricks, Bob. It was an elbow. I told you what it was.
Because an elbow's sharper. Bricks is like general chest pressure.
Would it be like taking 220-pound weights and putting it on your chest? Or how many duffel bags?
No, that's the problem. They spread out. Mine is pointed. What I'm trying to say is, I mean, I guess you could take a barbell and say pressing that against your chest. But it's got to be, it was a very focused area by the heart.
So it was a specific part of your heart. So you didn't, it wasn't the whole heart. It was like the bottom of it or something?
Well, I don't know. Now you're getting to areas I know nothing about, namely anatomy and medical law. I mean, I don't know. But I do know that it was certainly not a bunch of bricks. And it was not a bunch of, you know, I've always felt that my blood is the grout, kind of the grout work.
Right.
And my chest is the bricks. So if you've got a trowel, which is, you know, basically with the heart attack, maybe the heart attack was a trowel into the grout between the brick, which is my body, as you can tell. And no, I don't know.
I like this analogy. I really get it.
It was very painful.
Now, it was painful. Did you call an ambulance? Did you do it right away?
Here's what I did, my smart move. I called the ambulance. They pull up. So just the last thing I needed was for them to come in, ask me questions, then break out the, you know, thing, put me on it, and bring me out. So instead, the minute I started pulling up, I walked out to the back and started walking in the back of the ambulance. It was like, I saved myself 5 minutes of bullshit.
And you weren't on a gurney. You didn't make them transport you down on a flatbed.
I walked onto the gurney.
Because
I was like, oh, they're going to take the gurney, walk in my house, ask me 5 questions. Are you the guy that called? And I'll be like, oh my God. Oh, get on the gurney, then bring me back out. It's 5 minutes.
Then they strap you in, take your blood pressure, do all that crap, right?
Yeah, they did this on the ride. It was better.
And when you got to the what hospital did you go to?
I took the FDR. I was very nervous. I was like, why are they taking the FDR? What if it's traffic?
That's stupid.
Well.
But in the ambulance, they have epinephrine. They have the stuff they would need to give you in case you.
I guess, but it worked out. And then I get to the hospital. They operate right away, shove me right in like they. You know, it was kind of cool. They brought me in the entrance, you know, the ambulance entrance, right onto the, you know, the loading dock, basically, and then right into the operating. But it was freezing cold. Man, nothing worse than a cold. You're free. They take all your clothes off. It's freezing. It's February. I'm freezing and they're operating, you know.
Why didn't they put a blanket over you?
I'm not a diva, but Bob, yeah, they did put a blanket over me.
But you had the VIP entrance. So it's a mezza thing.
I guess so. And it could have been a lot worse. But so then I had some stents put in.
Stents, not an angioplasty.
No.
So you
and then
got
2 days later, some more stents.
Because you had it came back again, something else?
I don't know. I guess whatever they saw, you know. Whatever they saw. I don't question the doctors. Bob, they, you know, whatever.
Did you have any kind of life-affirming realization during that time?
I was hoping for a life-affirming realization. And, you know, I was hoping for like a mellow kind of a like, hey, you know what? But it really didn't happen that way. After a day, I made the mistake of looking at social media and I already got annoyed. And I was like, how can you be annoyed a day after a heart attack?
Yeah.
By anything. You're supposed to be beyond above that. Transcend, you know.
But then you're not funny anymore.
No, you're not. You're right. Well, I was annoyed a day later by something.
And now, have you adjusted your diet? You're not on the 6-day bacon diet, right?
I adjusting my diet. Yes, I don't eat bacon really, but I would say most of the other thing. I mean, I've got like medication. I've got 5 medications I take every day. So why should I have to adjust my diet and take medication?
Why be unhappy if you've got the blood thinner, right?
It's basically spitting in the face of scientific advancement. If I take all these blood thinners and go, oh, I better eat healthy too. That doesn't make sense.
So you're kind of combining the theories of both parties here. You're believing in science and medicine, yeah, and yet no one's going to take your human rights from your meat that you want.
Exactly. Yes. So well put.
Your body is actually bringing the country together.
In many ways it is. It's tearing me apart and bringing us together.
Now, what is the main theme of your book? Because forgive me for not having read it, but it just came out.
The thing, just I analyze each state, like why did this state end up with the personality that they have? So I look at their history and then the experience. We've both been to probably every state. I've been to 47, except for the Dakotas and Wyoming, I haven't been to.
Right.
So I've been to all 50, really. And so I try to analyze why that state got the personality and what they should do in if we break up. You know, I kind of just meditation on the 50 states and on our country's personalities according to each state and according to their area of the country.
Do you actually think the United States could break up?
Sure.
I mean, Texas can secede anytime it wants.
Texas, California, they're ready to go. Both of them are ready to go. And I mean, we put it this way, we can't go on the way we're going and expect things to just magically get different.
Right.
Things don't go like that. Things get worse, but they never get better by just sitting there and going, let's just keep doing what we're doing. You know what I mean? So in lieu of some great, what I would love to see is like a convention, like a constitutional convention with like 100 of the greatest thinkers in America getting together and going, look, here's the plan. But until somebody comes up with an idea to do how to execute that, we're just going to keep dwindling, you know, it's going to just keep deteriorating. And then horrible things will happen and people throw their hands up and go, we got to get together and just be tweeting at each other. We got to unify. And you know what I mean? Unless there's a plan in place, things don't happen.
Yeah, I put a thing on Instagram that was like saying, it was like the United States, I thought it was a sweet thing of a red and a blue part of the country hugging each other. It was one of those, you know,
nice.
What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding, Elvis Costello moment for me.
Yes.
But then I got, from the right, from the left, from the middle, from bots.
Yes.
Drove me insane. And I started apologizing to people that are that have been in a terrible life their whole life. They lived in a ghetto, African-American person saying, you don't understand my experience. And I write a paragraph back. And then the person that goes, you know, after the way you treated us these 4 years and hassled us for our president, now you want a hug? And I'm like, I'm really sorry. I don't disrespect your values. I'm like in the middle, and it ends up nowhere except I feel bad for everybody. But,
exactly. And guess what? The point of the whole, if this is ever going to work, all the people that think definitively, like it's got to be this way or that way, we'll see you when we're all drenched in blood, because unless people are willing to think of the idea of a compromise, that's how it's going to end up.
The compromise, isn't that to respect everybody's beliefs and somehow fit? You have to have different rules for different areas, just like you're saying.
Yes. And the fact is, the minute it became pejorative to call people both sides means you don't want to end up slicing each other with machetes in the street. But the way people talk on social media, I hope they're going to be ready when that day comes, because that's what they're pushing for. Anytime people talk this tough, that's going to lead somewhere and it's not going to be good, you know? So I hope it, yeah.
I just hate reading the words, follow this thread, because you just go from hate back to hate back to hate. And it fuels the anger of everyone.
Of course, you know, but, you know, that's how it is until we implement my plan, which is the Constitutional Convention once a year.
I think that's a great idea.
Thank you. And don't forget, Bob, the original Constitutional Convention, no press, because they knew once you start getting people adding their two cents in, that would ruin it. So for this thing, no social media during the convention. You don't get to listen until it's over and they hammer some ideas out. How nuts would that drive the public?
It would be very cool. They could zip tie the phones like Chris Rock or Dave Chappelle.
Yes.
And then they have to actually listen to each other and write stuff down. They're allowed to have a pen.
Yes.
And what about doing all the governors of every state? Does that help? Or does that turn into Tower of Babel?
No governors, because governors have their own agenda, which is their people, which is one of the flaws, but they're supposed to have their own agenda is their people. So you know, it was like, these lobbyists come in and because they're going, they're corrupting people who need one jobs. If a lobbyist goes, hey, I'm going to give you 100,000 jobs, of course you're going to give them a break on their taxes. So it's like the whole thing is set up where we don't even know the definition of what's corruption and what's business. You know, these things all need to be figured out.
Yeah, because if you're on a side, no one wants to hear that their side is corrupt. But it's impossible for them to even communicate without being corrupt. How are politicians not corrupt or hiding something? How are most people not corrupt?
Exactly. So this is why it sounds like you're ready for my new group. It's radical, the radical center, the radical moderates. And what we're going to do is we're going to let people, because people think moderate, they think it's like a kind of term like, no, our first move is a blood-drenched, like kind of a pogrom, excuse the term, against the left and the right, just to let them know we can get ugly too. Then we sit down at the negotiating table and talk.
So it's a liberal centrist?
It's a centrist, radical moderates we are. And it's kind of a centrist, but we're not above getting a little violent when we have to either.
Right.
Or else everyone's going to go, oh, look at these milk toasts. Not that people use that expression anymore, but, you know.
No, there's no, all the good expressions are gone. Milk toast was a really good one.
Yeah.
It just means soggy toast. It's, you know.
Casper milk toast, they used to call them.
But who would put toast in milk? People did, I guess, right?
In the old days, milk was the only, you know, even my grandmother, she'd use the same tea bag for like 5 cups of tea.
Can you not say the words teabag and grandmother in the same sense? I mean, that's just my sense of humor. I remember when I was teabagging my grandmother. See, that's where you lose the audience. But then some people go, oh, no, tell me more, Bob, because their family's messed up.
Yeah.
What about a Coliseum show where you have the liberal centrist in the middle kind of protected like Mad Max? Kind of like like Thunderdome, and then you release the far left and the far right. That's the kind of thing you're talking about. Just let them go at it and get it out of their system.
Well, that's not really. I really do like that idea, believe it or not, because sometimes you do need a catharsis, and so I think that would be good. But I just want them to know that ultimately, people don't think of people that compromise. They don't think of them as capable of horrendous acts of genocidal behavior. And until we rebrand what it means to be a centrist, what it means to be a moderate, people are gonna be attracted to the left and right, like, oh, they're really extreme. Oh, they've the courage of their convictions. And then you'll be like, let's compromise, guys. Well, guess what? Once you're saying that, let's compromise, guys, and your hands are like Lady Macbeth covered in blood, people are going to be like, I'm attracted to that. Because people are attracted to that violence and sexuality. You know, there's a lot of complex issues going on in people's mind.
Well, especially now. I mean, this is a crock pot that boiled over this year. I mean, we've had everything happen where everybody's trapped in their place. And then everybody wanted to get business back. So they went, take off the mask. I don't care about it. And then and then maybe don't even think the virus is real. That's an extremist that doesn't think
that's crazy.
And then other people that take advantage of the extreme left that go and loot and riot. And that is all the defense the right needs, and justifiably. Anybody that does that shouldn't be allowed to do that, should be arrested.
Exactly.
And then people think that that's all the left is socialists and rioters.
Sure.
And then everyone thinks the right are just people that are uneducated and
Nazis. Right.
I just don't understand. But I guess it's because I was raised by loving parents. Your parents, did you have both of them?
Sure. Well, they were divorced, but I had both of them, yeah.
Were you close with both of them?
In different ways, yeah. I mean, I was more of a mama's boy, really, according to every relationship I've ever been in.
So you were a milk toast?
I was kind of a Casper milk toast in many ways. I don't like to admit it.
Did you ever wrestle with your dad where he put it, just the pointy part of his elbow in your chest? While your mom was feeding you bacon the day before when you were at her place?
It just sounds so wrong the way you said it.
I know. I'm sorry.
But
my favorite moment of this conversation so far is me asking you. So it's like a bag of bricks? You had already said what it was.
That was my least favorite part of this conversation.
I know. Because I liked it because I'm such an idiot.
It's infuriating.
How did you get so smart? Did you go to college, or did you just read a lot and listen a lot?
I went to college, but I was kind of a screw up. I really didn't appreciate it. If I could do it, of course, everybody says that. But
right.
I mean, the wasted hours when I would even sit in high school and sit there listening to something and not hearing it is really, I guess we could say that about any part of life, but in school particularly, is sitting there like an idiot, not even listening. Just my head was anywhere. And I'm like, what a waste. I was there anyway.
I did that too.
Later on, I started to read a lot. But I mean, plus doing comedy, I really had time to read. Because here was my trick. I'd get on a plane, and this is before I had people on iPads, you know. So you're on a plane, you can't put on the TV or movies. So let's say, sorry, there's a delay. 45 minutes, people are going crazy in their seats. I have a book I could read the whole time.
And most people, myself included, I would take, when I was really touring hard, I would sleep on a plane because I was a bit of a mess. But I would write a lot. I ended up writing a lot, but I didn't read as much. I still am not as, I admire that. I mean, I had a course in college and it was Old and New Testament. That's all I had to do that semester. Read those two pretty damn famous books. And pretty damn famous. I'm sure make a lot of people happy. but that Old Testament's pretty goddamn good. But I dropped out to go to take a film course because it's a lot of reading. They're like,
because the film course is fun.
Yeah.
And even the kids in the film course were more fun than the kids taking the Old Testament course. The kids in the Old Testament course were great, deep people. But you're like, they don't have nice sweaters. These kids in the film course have like nicer clothes.
Right.
You know, I get it. Yeah.
I need a picture of Abraham offering Isaac up to God, or it didn't happen. When Moses, I need a picture. I'm sorry.
Now, yes, exactly. And you go to the Old Testament class, and even when you see those kids out at the bar, they only have corduroy pants. I know. I knew exactly what was happening.
I had a lot of corduroy pants then, and wallabies. I wore wallabies.
Yeah. The corduroy pants were very hot back in the late 70s, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think I was a Gap kid. I can't remember.
I don't think the Gap existed until, I think that was probably in the 80s.
Maybe it was Miller's Outpost or something like that.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, also, yeah, there was like a couple of like, it was sort of that Southern rock era when, you know, there was like, you buy like LL Bean stuff, and you know, when Timberlands were white guys. People forget in the 70s, I had Timberlands.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
How old are you now?
61.
I'm older. I always knew I was older than you because I was older than you. I'm 64, but I haven't had a heart attack yet. So let's go to a quick commercial.
Another one.
Well, just one more, and it's for bacon. I'm sure it's all. Yeah, it's a whole bacon. Bacon's one of my biggest sponsors, just in general, just bacon. All right, so that was a good spot. It wasn't about bacon.
No, it wasn't.
But I could bring,
if you want me to bring some of my meds out, we could do a cross promotion.
That would be fantastic. Bacon and what's the blood thinner?
Well, I have a couple.
My dad was on Coumadin.
Oh, no, I'm not on Coumadin. I'm on Metoprolol, Clopidogrel. I don't know. Well, you know.
Who names these things? I mean,
they're all Latin words. I think they're like Latin.
Oh, okay.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Now, are your heart's in good shape? I don't have to worry about you now, right?
My God. Yes, I've got a heart like a lion.
So it's oversized, and it makes you want to eat young.
Makes you want to sleep in the middle of the grass for 20 hours a day.
Now, here's a question that an interviewer would ask, but I just want to know this honestly. And so I don't do interviews, obviously. It's pretty, I think you figured that out. Of all the gigs that you've done, and it, all television, news on SNL, you know, Tough Crowd, Comedy Central, all these things, sometimes I have real fond memories of the early stuff. And sometimes it's like the newest thing is exactly where I want to be, obviously. And I know, do you have something that stands out? Is there anything that you go like, wow, I was so in the zone or I treasured that?
It's going to sound like crass self-promotion, but this new HBO Max, no, I'm just kidding.
It's really good. No, I'm going to say the name again. Summer of 2020, a drive-in comedy special.
No, but
it's on HBO Max.
One of my favorite things I did was all like I did like anything where I did like New York Story, for example, when I did that New York Story one, like that one, because it reminded me so much of those days and growing up when I had the heart attack, I was in the ambulance and I thought I was dying because I'm running out of breath. And I said, at least I got New York Story out there.
Oh, man.
So that was obviously important to me.
How long did that run for?
A few months.
Oh, that was the 3-month one.
Maybe four months. Yeah.
But red state, blue state, same amount of time?
About the same amount of time. All of them about 4 months. And then shoot them, you know. Because you know how it is. When you're doing the same thing every night for 4 months, 8 shows a week, you do kind of want to move on. You start to get sick of it.
I used to look at marriage that way. 8-9 shows with the same person.
Oh, 7 days a week. Oh my God.
My grandmother. Do you have somebody special in your life?
Well, my wife.
Now, see, it said nowhere. I looked up everything. You got to talk to Wikipedia, which is the best source for news.
Yes, I'm sure they've really,
How long have you been married?
My wife, just a couple of years.
That's why I'm not refreshed.
But she's more impressed by you than anyone because of that I'm talking to because of the squiggly monster connection.
Oh my God. That is, how did that even, I cannot believe it became a sensation. It was in CNN Business.
We saw it the other night. Yeah, we saw it it was on last week.
It was really, I couldn't tell anybody. Colin, I couldn't tell a soul. I had to have my wife sign an NDA, my daughter.
How long was that? Did you shoot that ago?
It 2 months ago.
I feel like you didn't tell your daughter, but you gave her a hint. You're like, honey, I can't say, but trust me. And she's like, when are you going on that show? Just, I can't talk about it. Are you on? No, I can't.
Dad, are you a CIA operative? Yeah. And I got seven eyes and I'm a furry.
Yeah.
my oldest daughter did sign the NDA because she's a chatty Cathy. So I had to do it because she would talk. Chatty Cathy, for people listening, it was old expression.
If she talked, what would they do? Sue her?
Well, if somebody started putting on Twitter, watch the, you know, Masked Santa night because Bob Saget is Squiggly Monster. Then they all guessed it because, and it's funny, Ken Jeong was like texting me, hey, you got to come on Masked Singer and be a judge. I'm like, I'm really
busy. You said that on the show. I heard you.
Right. I'm really busy, Ken. But I worked hard. It was like 3-4 days rehearsal.
Of course. You were great. That's hard to do that show.
It was, you know what it felt like? It felt like I had a knee in the middle of my neck.
Yeah.
A pointy part of a knee. I had the thing was a 35-pound helmet. 35 to 40 pound helmet.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But my wife was like, I think it could be Bob Saget, but does he sing? I go, yes, he sings. So because I was the expert that knew you could sing, she's like, then it's definitely him. Yeah, I had the comedy knowledge. I go, yeah, he can sing. And she's like, then it's definitely him. So she guessed it.
Tell her
but
thank
I can't
you.
Remember, you know, because that show it started when it first came on. I was like, what is this show?
Same.
You really get into it after a while. You're like, but here's the thing. For my constitutional convention, what I was thinking was because everybody's critiquing. So you could never get everybody on social media anytime anyone makes any suggestion, right? So all these people would be wearing masks and voice distorted.
Right.
Until it's over.
Yeah.
So it actually would.
But doing it, having done it, nobody told me that I was going to be in a lineup with other characters. And I was in a place all the time with dark curtains. I never saw another person. And I had a sweatshirt on that said, don't talk to me. I had an N95 mask and a visor and a hoodie. And then we got Squiggly walking. Squiggly, we're taking him to his trailer. Squiggly's coming to choreography. I'm working with choreographers. What am I doing? I'm trying to kick my left foot.
Nice.
And then I'm working with a vocal coach because the neck band is pushing on my larynx. So I can't sing. I can't breathe. It was right. They took the thing off. I'm bright red.
Yeah, you know? It seems like a hard costume. Well, all the costumes.
This one was harder. And then I'm standing in line. And I look next to me and I see a jellyfish and a broccoli. And I'm like, it looked like I'm on acid. I'd been in darkness. And then all of a sudden I'm in a lineup like the Star Wars bar, you know. But there's something hip about the show because of Ken and because of Robin Thicke.
Yeah.
And the ladies, you know, they're funny. You know, Nicole's
and
cool.
How long does it take to get into makeup and costume?
I had no makeup at all. To get into the costume would take, in the beginning, it would take like 45 minutes. But then it took longer because they had to keep adjusting it. As we got it down, because every time I wore it, it was like, I really can't sing. And they would go, we'll put more foam there so that I could sing, but I couldn't breathe. And it was never.
You're amazing.
It was. It's just hilarious. And then I watched it. My wife was like, "Oh, Squiggly." She started calling me Squiggly around the house.
Yeah, that's not good.
That ain't good. Would you do that show?
I don't know. Maybe.
What if they just gave you bacon all the time?
Maybe I could be bacon. Please welcome.
Whoa.
Bacon.
I'm gonna send an email. And you'll have to do it. The thing you'll have to do is the worm. You'll have to lay on the ground and do that bit that people used to do.
You ever see those old acting class? That was the big joke. You have to be bacon, you know. They would always say that.
Did you go to acting workshops?
Yeah. And boy, I'll tell you the truth. I could not have picked up less until years in the rearview mirror. I did not have any idea because I just didn't understand what it meant, acting. I didn't understand I understood how hard it was. I didn't understand how simple it was to get out of your own way.
Yeah.
You know?
I went to acting classes and Jerry Seinfeld recommended the teacher. It was Daryl Hickman. And he'd been studying with someone else, but he said, I think Daryl would be good for you. And he was spot on. He's a person that can, you know, like scan someone and figure out. And that's why I'm sure he was a great director for your show. Yeah,
he really pays attention.
Meanwhile, he's done some really generous stuff for me. And so have you. You did my scleroderma benefit.
Yeah, that was fun.
You're a nice man. You're a really nice man.
No.
And you're a good actor, you know? I mean, you were able to play Amy Schumer's dad. That's acting.
Yeah, and look who I was in the scene with. What's-her-face, who won Best Actress the same year from...
You were in a scene with her, and you're saying, what's her face?
I'm saying I showed her. She was in a scene with my acting, and next thing you know, she wins Best Actress in the Academy Awards.
Wait a minute. I got to look up who this is, because I'm not remembering. Hold on. What's your favorite movie experience? Was that it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't really like acting that much, you know? I don't like going on movies. I don't like it. You know, my mind is too... I don't even like going to baseball games for 2 hours. So sitting on a movie set drives me nuts. I mean, talk about a good place to write. Thank God laptops are invented, because that's all I can do in a movie set. Just sitting there for hours and make up. Oh, God, it's annoying.
But you're really good. And you're talking about Brie Larson, right?
Yeah, Brie Larson.
Brie Larson was my television daughter on a show called Raising Dad when she was 10.
See, between the two of us, she learned acting. That's why she won the Academy Award. I was going to take full credit for myself, but now I have to split it with you.
Trainwreck was a good movie. And you've known Bill Hader for a while, right?
No, I don't know Bill that well. I mean, I just met him. I met him a couple of times, but no, I don't know him that well.
I don't know why I assumed it. Were your SNL days fun? Because you were so great.
Yeah, they were fun. Some of them were fun and some of them weren't fun, you know?
Yeah, I know everybody that's ever done the show.
That's how it is.
Either as an acquaintance or as, and people would, you know, it depends on how it's running, how it's going.
Yeah, yeah. And our, you know, your attitude there too, you know?
Yeah.
Like definitely, you know, I could have brought more to it too. You know, it's just the way it goes.
Well, you were exactly where you were and where and how you looked at things.
But I like to look at things more like Irish Catholic, which is you're exactly where you're not supposed to be, Bill, Bob, you know.
What I've always liked about you, what I think makes a comedian, and I think we're finding it more and more and more when you watch Dave Chappelle, what he did on SNL, you watch Bill Burr, what he just did on SNL, is that people... We have to be ourselves. We can't let people stop us. And you always had a truth about everything you said. And I have a quality of self-awareness, which is one of my things I like about myself and my work. But you always have had that. Always.
Yeah, and me and you both have the same thing where we like to digress in the middle of our sentences. Like that's part of our thing is that in different ways, but we're both, you just see, like you said, I could see you sitting in school and the teacher's going, I'm serious. One more word. And you're like, I can't. And then they're like, that's it. Get out. You know what I mean? I don't know what disease that would be, but it's something.
I don't know what else school was designed for. I mean, it's, but you also have this quality of your digression. Isn't it amazing when you, and yours is planned. So yours is, you do some brilliant ones and you've done it in everything you've ever, every long form you've done of your stand-up. My favorite moments for me are when I bring it around, whether I've planned it or not.
Yes.
And when you don't plan it and it comes back for that audience and for you, that's the best show. That's
what stand-up's all about, that live thing. Exactly. That can never be repeated, just that moment. And that has to have the audience participate in it. You know what I mean? Like, once again, most of those moments happen when you're talking to somebody.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you ever talking to somebody in the audience, they just say something, you're like, oh my God. And the crowd, they think it's a setup.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, this person is telling you something right now. That's just amazing.
Yeah. Everybody says, did you plan that?
Yeah.
And they don't understand. No, I've been doing this for 40 years.
You know, yeah.
I didn't plan it. Do you have a favorite show? Was there a favorite venue that's like, was magic for you? It would be a Broadway stage probably, right?
Well, no, the Comedy Cellar. I mean, the Comedy Cellar was the first time I went there. I went as just to check it out. I wasn't doing comedy yet. And I went with my friend and we had these two dates. We're on a double date. And I walked downstairs. People were smoking. It was a, I was like, this is what my mind envisioned comedy would be like, Lenny Bruce.
Yeah.
Like, and then my friend, Dom Herrera, was on stage, you know?
Yep.
And my friend, Dom Herrera, took a sip. He had a cranberry juice. And he took a sip in the middle of his act, you know? And my friend goes, drink it before it clots. And my friend goes, Dom Herrera goes, what? And the guy goes, there's nothing. He goes, no, no, tell me what you said. I want to know. And he goes, I said, drink it before it clots. And Dom Herrera starts laughing literally for 30 seconds like it's the funniest thing he ever heard. And laughing until my friend was this big. Just and Dom Herrera goes, no, no, I swear, that drink it before it clots because it's red. Folks, I mean, I give it up when something is really that funny, like this guy saying, drink it before. And he just reduced my friend to this big just by laughing and repeating what he said. It was one of the funniest. My friend, to this day, he remembers. My friend remembers
of
it.
Of course, of course. We remember all those moments. I performed when I was like 22 in Ottawa at some place called Hiccups or Googles or I don't know. One of them. And I'm on stage and there's a young guy with kind of a, he's a white kid with a kind of a Epstein the Animal fro, which was from Welcome Back, Cotter. Sorry, I'm 104. And I made fun of him and started talking to him and he was real attentive. It was Norm MacDonald.
Oh.
I'm the first comedian he ever saw.
That is great.
And then I ended up directing Dirty Work.
Yes. Oh my God.
It's amazing. And he was talking to me. He was very into it. And I was exchanging with the audience and I would digress. And he was there for the whole ride, you know?
That is so great.
Isn't that weird?
Oh my God.
There is a love that Sarah Silverman has a party out here sometimes for a bunch of people when it's her, it's a Christmas party, I think, or is it her birthday? I don't remember. It's
well, her birthday is on Christmas, so it makes sense.
There it is. And it's so fun because nobody's going to perform, but it's like everybody, you know, it's like all the people you want to see.
Sure.
They don't want to see me, but I'm excited to see them. Yeah.
You're like, they can't help but be nice, but you're like, hey.
Hey, we got to talk after this. They're like, yeah, okay. And next thing you know, they're just not there. I don't get that part.
Hey.
Hey, can I have a selfie? That's what you don't do. Oh, my God. It's like you want to have a conversation with someone. And then I went and saw Springsteen backstage after the Broadway show. Did you go and see that?
I did.
It was breathtaking, right?
Amazing, yeah.
And I got my two daughters and I got my wife and they're different people. And we went went downstairs just for a few minutes and I had that selfie twitch where I wanted to do it. And then I realized, what are you doing? Don't even, just talk, the man will talk to you. And
that would have been bad if you had done it.
Who's the most excited you've been with, who you've been around? What person has gotten you to the point where, holy shit?
Well, I mean,
besides this Zoom with me.
Well, like, I mean, at Saturday Night Live, I barely said two words, and Bill Murray and Neil Young separately, you know, because of what they meant and in that part of my life, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, and anytime I had an audition for anything, I was never starstruck, but this will show you a certain age, talk about an age. I was wanting to read for some stupid movie or something and Sidney Poitier was in there.
Oh.
So because when I was a kid, nobody was a bigger star than him.
No.
You know? And for whatever reason, I sat there and you could tell he was kind of like, this guy's, you know, not professional. Cause I was like, I couldn't even read my lines. And I just finally left. It was so, you know, but Sidney Poitier, what somebody of that age, when you're a kid, what they meant, it just hit me and I couldn't do anything about it. You know what I mean? Everybody else, I'm kind of like, yeah, you know, like even Bill Murray. I love Bill Murray and Neil Young, but not like Sidney Poitier. I was like, I couldn't even do what I was trying to do. Cause I was, it just brought back all these memories of when I was a really little kid, you know?
I met him also one time with, I was with Don Rickles at dinner.
Did he mention my audition?
He mentioned your new book. But Rickles said stuff to him that I can't even say. And I cannot say it. And Sidney was laughing so hard because it was a thing. It was a connection. Rickles. Yeah, it's Don Rickles.
If Don Rickles didn't say something to him, that would mean he didn't like him.
Yeah, but what he said was probably not the best, you know.
I'm sure it was, you know.
Well, it was. Do you remember when Don was on Letterman with Denzel?
Yes.
Don couldn't believe. He said, I went on and Denzel wanted to stay. He'd done a couple segments and then wanted to stay to be there with me. Don was like a kid. He couldn't believe that Denzel. And if anybody hasn't seen it that's listening to this, they've got to look this up on YouTube.
And I remember Denzel Washington saying some other Letterman episode about how his son and his son's friends, they played college basketball team. And they all listen to Don Rickles and just cry with laughter.
Yeah.
Denzel Washington's son and his friends, you know what I mean? So,
and Denzel was dying. He was laughing so hard. And it was three more segments with Don. And Don did all that stuff. Could you get my car? And
nobody's funnier. Nobody's funnier than Don Rickles.
But you can't do that now. It's a different... And nor should anybody else do it. You know, because people cop that style. But... It's Don. It was Don because he came from an old generation and he was all love, just all love.
Sure.
So, well, Colin, I can't thank you enough for being here and turning your lamp on.
Thank you. I'm glad you got this. I mean, honestly, I'm not sure if it really does look as red as it looks to me. Is it that red?
It looks good. I look like a ghost. I look pale. I don't know what's wrong. I mean, you look like you have color. I look like I'm dead. I mean, you're the one.
Demonic.
Yeah, you do. You have a pinkness. We can't color correct it. It's Zoom.
No, good point.
But I do have a ghosty look. Maybe we'll tint this thing and we'll make you even more red if you don't mind.
Ooh, like that idea. All right.
Yeah, and I want to say your stuff. So. This is the thing that people have to watch. I just watched it. It's really fun and it's loose and it felt good to see the camaraderie and to everybody was good. And you took stuff out that I'm sure was terrible, but, Rich Voss, I mean, he must've been horrible, but you kept in the gems.
How about when he goes to the cars, where are you from? Detroit?
I thought that's pretty damn great. Yep. It's summer of 2020, a drive-in comedy special, and it's on HBO Max, which, you know how they named that? The head of HBO's kids named Max, and they just said, what channel do you want to call it? HBO Max, and they misunderstood the assistant, and they wrote down the whole thing. It was just supposed to be an HBO app. Nope, nothing true about that. And then the book,
I liked it.
It is overstated, a coast to coast roast of 50 states. And I can't wait to get out there and do it again. Are you going to be like me when it's safe? Are you just going to go nuts and probably do a year straight without stopping?
I would love it. I would love to just go out and do it. You're right. I'm glad it took this long to get back on because then you really do appreciate it more. You know?
I never appreciated it this much. And I would go like, I want to direct. I'm writing a movie right now to direct. I want to, I'm work in development, doing Zoom every minute.
Right.
Getting my head taken off on Masked Singer. That's a career. But, but to be able to get out and do it again, I've never gone, I have a responsibility. I need to do this. It's
Yes, it's our thing, you know.
I think we're frontline workers.
I think we're essential workers, and I think that these medical people are getting all the credit.
Yes, and they're going to get the vaccine before us, and I don't think that's right. This should be you and me getting the vaccine, and
Especially then a heart attack. I should be.
Yeah, you're right. You need it. You can't risk a pointy elbow in your chest.
No.
That's nothing like bricks. And if people haven't seen Red State, Blue State, go on Netflix and watch it immediately. I can't believe they put it on CNN first. That's so brilliant. It was so it was so perfect for that.
Really great. And they do all the, I'm the only game in town. They were doing all this promotion. It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Now the ratings are up, but you don't want to have to go through what people go through to get that kind of press.
They could put it back on, you know.
Actually, it's not a, not any, every single thing in that hour special, hour and change, is relevant. It hasn't, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed, because you also keep it evergreen, because you're talking about the general problem. You're not mentioning, you don't go ragging.
I do wild lines afterwards where I go, here in 2019, here in 2022.
Well, you probably did ADR before it and did every year all the way up to you know, when you would be 105, so you don't care anymore.
Yeah.
And that'd be great. You change the copyright on it every year.
Yeah, but you don't. You
never age. You wear the same shirt every year. Well, Colin, thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Thank you.
And I'm going to see you in New York when I'm back.
Yes,
I'm going to, we'll meet at the cellar. We'll try not to sit next to Jeff Ross. And we'll have you. Do you still eat chicken wings at the cellar? Because they're so good there.
You can't resist. You know, it's better to die of a heart attack than not eat those wings.
I think you're right. I think if I was getting an angioplasty, I'd want him to shove a wing in there from the comedy cellar.
Yeah. And the deer hunter before he led him to the suicide thing.
Where he was going, mow, mow, mow.
Yeah. So
that was an that was a fun movie. I saw it with the laugh track. The director's cut has a laugh track on it. God, that war ended well. Well, hopefully we won't go into a war and we'll just keep it in the country.
Yeah, I hope so. Civil war, please.
Oh, God in heaven. Just stay well, man. And and tell your wife thanks a lot for the props on Squiggly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
I'll see you, man. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Colin Quinn. I love Colin Quinn. He is just a genuine, wonderful person. And if you look at this on YouTube, you'll see that lamp that he hasn't turned on for any other press. But our color differences on the Zoom, I'm a pale man, and he had this beautiful redness about him. I think that he must have had a red lamp on the other side of the room, or the light was coming through his red curtains. Anyway, Colin Quinn, such a talented guy. You got to watch the new special. You don't have to, but I recommend it extremely highly. It's on HBO Max, summer of 2020, a drive-in comedy special. So you get to get that drive-in experience and then decide if you want to do it. And his book, I'm going to say it again, Overstated, a coast-to-coast roast of 50 states. But also go back to Netflix and watch Red State, Blue State. It's just spectacular, and it really does speak to where we're at. So another episode of Bob Saget's here for you. Up at the top is a phone number you can call. Sometimes I'll be calling you guys, see how you're doing. And we're on Mondays right now for a while, but then we'll go back to some Monday, Thursdays as well. We're just doing some Mondays, so the shows are even more special for you nice people. Or not nice people. I like everybody at this point. I don't care if they hate me. You know, I mean, real hatred, you block, you know, because I don't do too much negative. Nor should you. You should all take care of yourselves and try to think positive, because someone has to. Let's do this. So you, I don't know why I just turned into a donkey of some kind. That's a sheep. No, it's a ewe. Anyway, Subscribe, rate, and review. That's what they tell me to say. Subscribe, rate, and review. That's all you got to do. Or you can follow it, depending on how you get these things. And I'm going to keep doing it till the end of time because I love it. I'm not just saying that. I'm reading it. It's right next to my little camera on the computer. You guys be well, and I'll be seeing you or talking to you. I wish I could hear you on the next podcast. Take it easy.